Sweet. So welcome into another episode of a Colorado Craft Podcast by Mile High Bourbon and Rye, presented by Centennial Cuts out of Southeast Colorado. Today, I am very, very happy, super excited to be up here in Fairplay, sitting at the Snitching Lady Distillery with Thomas. Thomas, how you doing?
Doing good.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me for the episode.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, this is going to be a blast to talk to. You guys' spirits are just awesome. I think I end up talking about you at some point on every episode as it is. Yep. But yeah, it's super pleasure to be up here. Love having you guys' spirits and everything. So today we're going to talk about a few things. We'll talk about some of what you're producing out there, the products you're doing, some of the history of all of that, what it's like being up in Fairplay, all these things. So before we get started, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, hit like, subscribe, all that stuff, help support the channel. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple, give us a review, give us a rating, let us know, and then just share this all around by mouth. So now that I've got the standard spiel of follow me so I can grow done, tell us a little bit about the Snitching Lady.
The Snitching Lady, I started this distillery pretty much off of a dream. What I did was the Snitching Lady came about as my old fiance would always call the cops on me for making moonshine. I was not giving her the time of day, so we ended up deciding that I was going to do it legally one day, and it was kind of like a pipe dream. And when I constantly said that, she said I never would, and I ended up doing so, and calling it the Snitching Lady after her. And I did this for almost a decade before legally started this business, just for fun, giving hooch out to my friends and family to enjoy, and all based off of my father's recipes and my great grandfather's recipes and so forth down the family tradition. And it became a whole thing to where I didn't get loans, I didn't do anything. I literally hand built the copper pot stills, hand built the mash tun, did everything myself, to the point where I just really wanted to keep it as old school and traditional as possible to moonshine.
Nice.
And that being said, here we are today, still mashing, still distilling, and just somehow not getting caught.
Right? That was great. So you like literally just started with it built up, kind of tucked behind you, I'm guessing somewhere behind your house.
Yep. Did it behind the house, did it on camping trips, long haul for a 20 gallon still on camping trips. But I did it as much as possible, is kind of all based on when the mash would finish fermenting, everything like that. As soon as it finished fermenting, I would go forth and just get it done. And sometimes I'd have to go to work to one of my other jobs, and I would have to call in sick, do anything I could just to like make sure that I didn't destroy that mash, and wanted to make a little bit of booze, and I didn't even make money off of it then, it was just for fun. And I gave up almost everything for it. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
So I figured, obviously, while you're doing that, you found out you got a knack for it, because I've tasted your spirits here, and they're damn good spirits. So.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And so when you've got that started, you guys started off in a building a little bit down. It wasn't this location that we're at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So just kind of, your growth and moving into this building, which I'll put in a couple of shots of sort of this space, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But talk about how you, like, starting it off legally, how'd you go from just doing it in the backyard and giving it out to people to, hey, now I'm selling this and making an actual job?
So how I really started was, I was not good with trying to figure out licensing and all that. A really good friend of mine, she ended up helping me along, and she's actually my accountant nowadays for this distillery, but she helped me along with licensing everything. And also Lenny from Deerhammer Distillery helped me along as well with trying to figure out what licensing to get first, how to go about it and everything.
Okay.
And I can't thank both of them enough, for everything they've done for me and they still do for me. And that being said, it started from the backyard to almost 2 years of trying to get licensing, trying to save up money through three different jobs to get the licensing, to find a place to rent, to see if this was even going to be possible, you know? And at this point, you know, during that time, it was a shot in the dark. I was gambling big time because I didn't know if this was going to be practical. I'm putting all my money that I had, all my time into it. And it somehow came together almost like clockwork. It was just perfect puzzle pieces aligning. And as soon as we got the old place that we used to be in next door, I built the first still to match what my father's still used to look like when I was real little, off of pictures and stuff. And then from there, got one little fermenter and then built the mash tun. And then it was just, well, game on. How are we going to heat this? Let's do open flame. Because open flame, I felt it was the best way to do it. Because I kept thinking, oh, well, if you're going to eat bacon, how are you going to want to eat that bacon? You want to cook it with like a flame, you know, flame, like over a campfire, over a gas powered stove. It's always better compared to an electric or a steam, anything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what I did was I said I was just going to do natural gas the whole way.
Okay.
Since the fire department went money to coal. Because I was all for that, but
that would have been cool. But I can also understand them saying, "Well, maybe not."
Yeah, it might be a bad idea, especially inside a building,
right? No doubt,
out the middle of the woods in Fairplay, Colorado. But yeah, so that being said, I got everything started. I started with the two mashes that I did, really the three mashes that I did in my backyard regularly.
Okay,
which was. The first mash that I ever did by myself was a grape brandy.
Okay.
And I used old grapes from the winery, and I would just get buckets of it for free.
Yeah.
This time, you know, I asked for more than a couple buckets. I asked for a couple thousand pounds just to see what it would take to make that grape brandy mash.
What you can do, yeah, absolutely.
And that came out amazing, and I was like, okay, the next one's going to be rye.
Yeah.
Rye has always been my favorite whiskey. And it was my father's recipe, my dad's favorite whiskey as well.
Nice.
And I did that and it came out absolutely amazing. So I kept with those two constantly for the first couple months of being open.
Yeah.
And then I pushed for blue corn because corn whiskey is always my family's kind of deal too. But they always used yellow or white corn, whatever they could get from the farmers in North Carolina.
Okay.
And I ended up just finding blue corn, and I thought it would be extremely different. I kept the recipes the same, but with the blue corn, that was like my own little niche to it, you know? So I used the blue corn from the Ute Mountain tribe. And I did that actually before I was even legal.
Gotcha.
I would call Bow and Arrow Brand Grain and I would ask Simon, I was like, hey, can you deliver this? He's like, oh, are you a business? At that time, I was not. I was like, no, but I can meet you at the Walmart in Frisco and pick this up in my truck. And he would just kind of laugh like, sure, why not?
Nice.
So I just picked up a couple hundred pounds at a time, used only about 50 at the time, you know, when it was illegal. But now I'm using all the way to 2 pallets of blue corn almost every month.
Whew.
And I keep those guys happy. I keep Mark Arnish Farms with my rye, my barley, my wheat, and all that extremely happy as well because I'm constantly ordering from them.
Yeah.
And it's grown so much, you know, like the first year exceeded my business plan by almost triple.
And that's gotta feel good.
Oh, it felt amazing. I was like, oh, well, maybe this is a good idea.
Yeah,
you know. So I ended up looking at the place next door, which that's where we're in right now.
Sitting right now, yep.
Yeah, and it was almost 3,000, a little bit over 3,000 square feet actually, and I was stoked. I was like, this place is huge. I mean, now it's like I'm trying to produce as much as possible, and it couldn't be big enough, but I'll keep it the same amount constantly now, you know? And that being said, I looked at this place and I was like, there's no way I could afford it, everything. I ended up talking to the owner that was trying to sell it for years, almost 8 years.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's a lot of work that needs to be done with this building. But if you're really into it, he's like, don't get a loan. Pay me and we'll do like a program where like, what do they call that? The like a carry to pay the mortgage.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of deal. So I pay him to pay the mortgage.
Yep.
Instead of getting like a loan or anything like that.
It's almost like a rent to own type of situation.
Exactly. Nice. And I'm already 5 years into it, almost paid off the building.
Awesome.
He's extremely nice. You know, I send him and his wife bottles all the time.
Well, they're
back in South Carolina now.
Yeah.
And and I've been slowly working on the building and just fixing the stills and constantly running the stills every day and making mashes every day and still trying to make stuff that my family's never made before, such as rum. Now we're working on rum and it's so fun. Like, I love working with molasses and cane sugar. So,
So actually that's one that I really want to talk about too. And then I come back to the history of the building, but the rum, I haven't tried your aged yet, but I did have it just the white rum when you first finished it.
Yes, sir.
You guys had a cocktail that was here that summer when you let that loose too, just in the tasting room. And oh man, it was absolutely phenomenal.
But, oh yeah.
Like, Colorado is a weird place to make rum. I feel like a lot of Colorado rums are just, because you go in expecting what you get out of like from the Caribbean and everything. So I know yours, I think, has kind of that same element to it, but that's, you're importing the molasses right from the Caribbean, right?
Yes, sir. All the way from Jamaica.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's like, it's the one batch of spirit that I actually make that isn't from Colorado.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate to say that, but unfortunately, Colorado doesn't make, they don't grow sugarcane. So
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever heard of Colorado sugarcane. So.
No, we grow a lot of sugar beets, but no sugarcane. And that's when it comes to everything else. I use 100% Colorado, you know, ingredients. But with the rum, it's really hit me lately. It's definitely a niche market.
Yeah.
But that being said, the Colorado rum that I started doing was just such a great idea for me, because I kept going to the beach and everything. I was like, oh man, I just want to make rum. I love rum.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that? And people in Colorado don't really want to drink rum that much.
It's not as big here, no.
Yeah, and it's as well with brandy. You know, I make a lot of seasonal brandy. But that's a real niche market, you know. It's people that love whiskey normally don't like brandy as much, you know. And the only difference is it's fermented fruit.
Yeah.
Then it's distilled, you know. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to drink and enjoy brandy and rum in this kind of state. But same time, whiskey has always been my number one.
Yeah.
So. And I always keep it that way.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Because you guys, that, like you were talking about, that blue corn, your blue corn bourbon is, I absolutely have enjoyed the heck out of that one.
Yeah.
I think you're definitely right, because blue corn's not what people are thinking necessarily. Because when you think corn, you're just thinking corn. Like, everybody's got the same idea.
Exactly.
Obviously, there's some differences in the different types of corn. And I think that flavor comes through well in that blue corn bourbon. So.
Oh yeah,
but the rum, I was absolutely blown away. I'm gonna have to try some of the aged rum before I leave here.
Definitely.
Oh,
I'll send you home with the bottle.
Sounds great. Yeah, no, we'll definitely try that, because that sounds exciting. Gosh, if you caught a glimpse of Bobina walking around Distillery Dog, she's joining us kind of, but now she's excited by traffic outside. But yeah, so rum, I know, like I said, it's kind of a weird one, but I think importing it directly, do you find anything kind of funky about trying to age it, or does it seem to age pretty well?
It ages amazing. The one thing that I really like about the age process with it is it has, so when it comes out of the still, it's mainly molasses and a little bit of, I mean, cane sugar, but cane sugar's,
yeah,
that it's turned into molasses. But like, I use cane sugar and molasses, And mainly this molasses base, after distilling it two times, it comes out so sweet, it still tastes like the molasses.
Okay.
But it has no sugar content left when it comes out of the still.
Right.
It's actually right at 160 proof when it comes right out of the still. It's strong as could be.
Yeah.
And I barrel it at 130 proof.
Okay.
Just to kind of tone it down a little bit.
Yeah. So you still got a high proof rum.
Yeah. But the aging process, it's absolutely amazing because I'll put it in this barrel and try it out. So far, we did the first batch last year.
Yep.
I pulled a little bit out with the Thief just this spring here.
Okay.
And it still had that really like nice molasses taste. But at the same time, it got this real dark hue to it.
Okay.
Right off the bat, and just has a beautiful, like, it tastes almost like kind of like shipwrecked wood would smell.
Okay.
It's like, this is amazing.
Picture that smell.
Yeah. Like, it's something right out of the Pirates of the Caribbean or something, you know?
That's way cool.
Yeah. And I mean, this next batch, I'm actually planning on doing a trip down to the Keys to visit this one distillery, but he's famous for dipping his barrels in salt water and soaking them.
Yeah.
And he told me to try it out. So I'm buying new barrels down in West Virginia.
Okay.
Taking them down to the Keys and then bringing them back.
So filled
full of salt water.
Yep.
And then empty the salt water out and fill it up with rum.
I mean, not a Colorado whiskey, but Jefferson's. They do their ocean aged.
Oh, yeah.
They stick it on the ship that goes across the equator. A whole bunch of
That's those. Such an amazing idea.
I think I love that one. It's got just that kind of like neat little brine kind of, like the salt spray in your face kind of. So exactly. I imagine that's going to do something similar to the rum.
Definitely.
In a barrel like that, so.
Yeah, that's one thing I always thought was really interesting with the Jefferson's is the, yeah, like it being on a ship, it's sloshing back and forth. It's got that morning dew sticking to the outside of the barrel and soaking into it. It's a great idea. It's amazing. Yeah. So
I think that I'm excited for that saltwater soaked barrel.
Yeah.
To finish the rum, because I think that's really going to give you, you're still making it up here. You're still aging it up here. It's still, you know, Colorado made product, but you're going to get that. I think you're going to get a lot of that Caribbean type of influence on it.
Definitely.
That's going to be cool.
That ocean taste, like for something in Colorado, we're a long ways from the ocean,
right? So. that'll satiate the cravings for a few of those people that are, you know, I love the mountains, but I miss the ocean.
Exactly.
I know some people like that, so that's going to be a good one to look out for.
Oh yeah, and I'll only be releasing the rum in the summers.
Okay.
I don't do the winters. You know, when it comes to the winters, it's just the whiskeys and the brandies, but the rum is summer specific, just so people here in the Colorado area can actually get a feel for, I don't know, being back at the beach.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's their vacation time.
Yep. Well, especially when you come up here, like for me, nothing really beats the views of being in the Colorado mountains. Like I can go up and down the Rocky Mountains and find somewhere that I'll be happy to just sit and cool off a little bit from being down in Denver all the time. But to add that in too, you get the beach taste. Mm-hmm. You get like I'm on vacation, I'm on the sandy beach, but I'm up here. And I think when you did the white rum release, it was even like Mountain Beach or something that you...
Yep, Lady on the Beach.
Lady on the Beach, that's what it was. Mountain Beach is a beer, but still, let's...
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so cool, because it does really give you that.
Because even the snitching lady's got to go on the beach and relax.
Right, yeah. She's got to go chill in the Caribbean, take a load off there.
Definitely.
So then the other one that I've had I've had a couple of the brandies that you guys have, and I definitely enjoy those. I think that's cool because, again, like you said, it's almost the same thing, just distilled for fruit instead of grain.
Yep.
But your American single malt.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that process. Are you guys, because you're malting it here too, right?
Yes, sir. Awesome. Yeah. So I get all my barley. So American single malt is 100% barley, similar to scotch and then like as well Japanese whiskeys and stuff.
Yep.
But here in America, we call it American single malt due to licensing and trademarks and stuff like that.
All the regulations for what you can call
it. Exactly. And Yeah, so the American single malt, I get all of my barley from Mark Arnish Farms in Kingsburg, Colorado.
Sweet.
Yeah, he actually used to, I think he still does, I don't know, but he grew all the barley for Coors for a long, long time.
Oh, sweet.
He might still do that. I'm not quite sure.
Coors might need more than one farm can produce. But
yeah, definitely. I mean, I imagine they get it from a lot of a few different places.
Yeah, but that's cool that he grew for them.
Yeah.
And you're getting some of that barley.
Exactly. Yeah, he saves me a good bit of it. And I go through, close to 20,000 pounds a summer.
Jeez, all right.
With barley and age 90% of the stuff that I make.
Yep.
You know, when it comes to it. But so when I get that barley, I have this old milk tank that holds about 10,000 pounds of grain at a time.
Okay.
And I soak all the barley in that grain tank or that old milk tank for about 3-4 days.
Okay.
I soak it, drain it, soak it, drain it, soak it, drain it until it starts to put off. It's called a little chit.
Okay.
It's when the sprout is just barely starting to crack out of the kernel.
Yep.
And once it starts to barely crack out of the kernel, I drain it out, spread it across a concrete floor right here in the back of the house, and shovel and rake it every 2 hours.
All right.
It is a process.
Yeah.
And that being said, that'll take about 2, sometimes 3 weeks to do about 10,000 pounds of grain.
Jeez, all right.
And when that's the malting process. And when I finish malting it, I mill it down, mash it,
yep,
and then distill it. And the mashing, you know, really the fermentation for the American single malt only takes about 3-4 days.
Okay.
That's like the shortest fermentation that my distillery is able to see.
Yeah.
The rye takes almost a week. The blue corn takes almost 3 weeks long just for one batch.
Just ferment.
Yeah.
Dang.
And I don't use turbo yeasts. I don't do any of that. I do it real old school. It's an old bread yeast.
Okay.
That my family's used since day one. So.
Nice.
That I know of at least. And that being said, once it's fermented, I distill it twice and then fill up our barrels and put them on up into the rick house at 11,800 feet and let it age away.
Yep, that's awesome. Well, I think being that high elevation, you know, 10th Mountain Spirits.
Yes, sir.
So I just did an episode with them a little bit ago, and he was saying the elevation really kind of, it seems to impart the, it's the elevation and the temperature fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
So just the fact that it gets real hot, then real cold through the whole winters, then hot during the day in the summer, cools back off at night. And the fact that we're sitting up, you know, here you're 11,000 feet where that's sitting.
Yeah.
It kind of makes it, it's like a 2 year drinks like a much older bottle.
Yeah.
Have you found that to be kind of similar for yours as well?
Definitely. You know, when it comes down to that, the aging process is, it ages a lot quicker.
Yeah.
With the less atmospheric pressure. I guess it's more atmospheric pressure at this point, but
yeah, up here.
So I call it the lung effect in the barrels.
Okay.
So it's due to it sitting up so high, it's always hot, it's always cold.
You know,
it goes from hot, cold every day, even the summer. I mean, it was 39 degrees this morning.
Yep.
And then it'll probably end up getting close to 80 degrees today.
Right, 80, yeah.
So, like, the rick house, it's not controlled by humidity, heat, or AC at all. It's literally just open-air rick house. And that being said, the lung effect, it helps it breathe. So it goes in the wood when it's hot. When it gets cold, it pulls out of the wood.
Yeah.
And then it just constantly does that for years.
Yep.
And then, you know, after 1 year of some of these aging processes, some of the whiskey will be almost black. It's like so dark.
That's crazy.
You look at it, it's like this should be like a 20-year-old, but it's 1 year.
It's just been sitting for a year.
Yeah, this is insane. But that being said, if I harvest a barrel in the winter,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how old it is, it's light as could be because all its remnants is still in the barrel.
Still in the barrel, yeah. Okay. Yeah. What char do you use? You go
I
heavy?
Do a level 2 and 3 char.
2 and 3, cool. All right.
There's been a couple of times where I use 4 char. I guess it's called the alligator char.
Yep.
That being said, the alligator char is nice for, like, say, a 2-year spirit, you know, something quick.
Yep.
All the 2 and 3s I keep and let sit for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Some of the bourbons, or really all the bourbons that I do, I'll put it in a brand new level 2 char barrel. And then I'll take it out after about a year and put it in a used barrel and use that barrel, that old bourbon barrel, for something like the rye or anything else.
Yep.
The American single malt and the bourbon are the only ones that get brand new oak a majority of the time.
Gotcha.
The ryes and stuff will, but I try to save all the new barrels for the bourbon.
But you have to for the bourbon. And then the single malt, I feel like American single malt seem to do really well in new oak as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think that definitely.
It brings out the taste more.
Yeah.
You know, and the ryes that I do, the ryes and the blue corn get an amazing color.
Yep.
With new barrels the old barrels. And the new barrels, when I put them in new barrels, it's like it almost gets too much flavor. Like,
yeah,
it's almost overbearing. Some people are like, wow, that's too, like,
so much oak,
rich
so much
in oak, you know? Like, so I use just the used barrel with the bourbon.
Nice.
From the old bourbon cask for the blue corn and the rye majority of the time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So spent grains, you send those off to back to farms and stuff?
Yep. There's two ranches that I actually send my spent grains to.
Okay.
One character, he's a great guy. He's funny as could be. Him and his family raise a bunch of pigs just down the way from here.
Okay.
And they get a majority of my grain.
Awesome.
He's got, God, like 30 plus pigs. That are like over 900 pounds. It's hilarious.
It's big hogs, man.
The big old, they're German Swabian hogs, the same hogs that I used to raise.
Okay.
But they're super friendly pigs, and love it. They're almost addicted to the alcohol in the grain still. So.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of distillers do that. And actually, part of the reason I asked is to sort of segue into a quick ad read here for the sponsor I've got now. So Centennial Cuts out of Southeast Denver. I mentioned them Southeast Colorado, not Denver. I mentioned them at the top of the episode. But all Colorado-grown beef, all their beef is, you know, gets to range, do all of that, but it's all finished on brewers and distillers' grains as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that process is what gives that real good marbling and all that. So the stings that you get, they cook up beautifully. The burger is still hands down the best hamburger I've had, just period. It is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
So they've got burgers, they've got steaks, they've got bundles you can do that'll give you different cuts of meat and burger, 50-pound, 75-pound. All the way up to like a 250-pound bundle. They do beef jerky. They do all beef hot dogs. They've got basically everything that you can be looking for beef wise. They've pretty much got it.
That's amazing.
They'll ship it right to your door too. So order online, centennialcuts.com. Use promo code MHBR, Mile High Bourbon Rag, and get 10% off your first order. Whatever you get site wide. So stock up on some beef, save yourself 10%, get it shipped right to your door. Might pick up, I think, some of the orders you might go pick up if you want. They've got a couple locations in Lakewood and Colorado Springs.
Okay.
As well as a couple satellite spots in DIA. And I think there was one other one, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
And then they do farmers markets and stuff like that too. So real awesome guys. Check them out. And actually, I'll shout out too. We got the beef tallow lotion that they started doing.
Ooh.
My wife uses that all the time on her hands. It's their beef tallow. It's lavender and vanilla that they grow, so it's still an all Colorado deal, and smells amazing, hydrates her hands. She also says her nails are harder than they've ever been, like made her nails just super healthy.
Oh, I imagine.
So, like, great product there. So check them out. Huge thank you to Centennial Cuts for sponsoring us. CentennialCuts.com, promo code MHBR, buy yourself some stuff, get it shipped right to your door, and enjoy some of the best burger, best steaks, great hot dogs, excellent beef jerky, all that stuff. So check them out. Thank you again to Centennial Cuts. jumping back into here, you guys moved into this building, you said, 4 or 5 years ago?
5 years ago now.
5 years ago.
Yeah, no, time flies, man.
Right? No, it's crazy. I was thinking of a couple of things the other day. I'm like, oh, yeah, I went and did that. Oh, yeah, like 7 years ago. That seems like it wasn't that long. But,
right?
But this used to be a bank, right? Because you guys have got the vault kind of in the back. And I'll do a quick like kind of video through here, and we'll pop that in so people watching on YouTube can get a good look at just the awesome bar top, the stools that you made, all of this stuff. But like, how is it you guys kept the safe in here?
Oh, had to keep the safe in the original vault.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the original vault from the early 1900s. They changed it out because it was a bank in the mid 1800s as well.
Okay.
This was like a gold processing bank.
Okay.
So like they took all the old, or not old, but they took all the gold.
Yeah.
And processed it or sent it off to the processors and like made blocks out of it and stuff wherever.
Seriously?
Somewhere
okay.
in Denver. And then, yeah, they exchanged it for cash and stuff for all the miners up here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually was able to get into one of the safes that was left here that
okay.
no one could open nice. For, like 70, 80 years, something like that.
You got to have found something cool in there, right?
Oh, man, I found so many. It was like 1910, 1920 coins.
No kidding.
It was so cool to see that. And there was like a couple of old notes and then like these old skeleton keys for the bank that I have no idea what goes to, but like... Yeah, it's these vaults and safes are absolutely beautiful. If you ever get to come out here, I suggest letting us give you a tour for this whole place. You know, it's an awesome place. It's got a lot of history, and you know, who knows what's actually happened here at this
right?
bank. You know,
well, that's what I'm thinking too. Like, it's gotta feel cool because, like you just said, who knows what's happened here? I'm sure even as you're just working, sometimes I'd have to just sort of pause and be like. Man, there's so much history just
yep.
naturally in this place now.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's wicked cool. Like I said, we'll get the quick video, and I can cut that in and let people kind of see as we're talking about it here.
Definitely.
But what Thomas said, like, hey, come up and check it out, just because tasting bar's awesome, whiskey's awesome, so you want to sit here and have a drink. But if he'll show you around, too. Take him up on that, because this building is way cool. And then, if I'm not mistaken, your stools, these are all done by you guys, or did you purchase these?
Yes, sir. They're all done by me. So what I did was all of the stools, they were old trees, that old bristlecone pine trees that were actually in my backyard. I cut them up and like sliced real thin slices on it, welded the steel bars, and then mounted it to the floor and everything and made a solid...
yeah.
Old dog love.
Yep. Whole bunch of dogs.
Yep.
Oh.
We're very accepting of dogs around here.
Get back. Come on. We're dog friendly up here, so.
Talk to Tom.
See if we can stabilize the video. No big deal. No, all good. But yeah, so cut those, welded them to the bars, got them on the floor.
Yep. And even the bar top. It's all made from the same trees that I milled myself with a chainsaw.
Okay.
And sanded down for long periods of time, stained and lacquered the whole thing.
Nice.
So like every bit of this distillery is literally made by me when it comes to the bar top, the stools, even the actual floor. I redid the floor with all Colorado white pine.
Oh, sweet.
And then stained the floor myself and did all that. Now it looks rough, but I love the way it looks because it looks like an old church floor to me, you know?
Oh, yeah, I can totally see that. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
And then it looks like probably pallets reused to kind of get some of the walls done here.
Yeah, so I didn't want to exactly paint over the original paint and stuff. I just wanted to keep it as much as I could, but I ended up using all the... I had piles and piles of pallets.
Yeah.
I spent, weeks ripping apart pallets one piece at a time and nailing it to the wall in a nice little manner and making it real kind of nostalgic for, you know, the whiskey era.
Yeah.
You know, such as oak and pine and all
yep.
that good stuff. So.
Oh, it definitely has that feel to it. Like,
yeah.
all the wood in here gives it a real good feel. Like, definitely has that. couple of barrels sitting around.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get a shot of the bar top, too. So I love the way that this looks. It gives you a very whiskey vibe and also a very mountain, like Colorado mountain vibe for sure.
Right. I even did the light fixtures, hand-hammered copper okay. light fixtures with hanging lights for the bar area.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it's nothing too special, but I really love it because it's the scrap pieces from what I use to make the copper pot stills.
Oh, sweet. So, yeah. Like, yeah, just keep... I mean, that keeps in with it being, like, truly yours, too.
Exactly.
I mean, that's cool to just have the idea that, you know, you had this basically just a passion, right? You just enjoyed doing it, and you were able to literally from scratch build the whole place up.
Exactly.
I mean, that's wicked cool, man.
Oh, man. It's more than a passion. It's actually everything that I've built from my heart, you know,
yeah.
into this place. This is... And that's what I want to be able to pass on to my kids one day, you know, is like this building, all the barrels of whiskey that I made, it's all my passion of love.
Yeah.
You know, and then they'll be able to open barrels that are way past my lifespan, like
yep.
dad made this, you know.
That's a cool legacy to leave behind.
Too. Right.
That's an awesome thought.
Because it's not about the money, it's about the love, you know?
Yep.
So
well, and you can feel that with all the. So tell me something about, because you guys do kind of a rotating cocktails.
Like, yes, sir.
You're constantly rotating those. Like, to me, I can tell that like love and passion in the cocktails, because those are all. I mean, they're always a great cocktail. I haven't had anything up here I haven't enjoyed. So,
huh, thanks.
What goes into creating your like cocktail menu? How do you come up with the new ones? How does it rotate?
So we all kind of have like little meetings and stuff about like what cocktails we're going to do, what whiskey we want to do, if we want to use an aged whiskey or a clear whiskey that just came out of the still.
Yeah.
We do both, you know, the clear and the aged. But when it comes to it, it's all seasonal. So like, oh, peaches came out today, you know, like yep. everybody's selling peaches on the side of the road from Palisade and Hotchkiss. Oh, yeah. Like, well, we're going to do a peach cocktail. Like, oh, it's apple season. We're going to do an apple cocktail, you know? Awesome. So we do everything real seasonal.
And you're buying it still from Colorado. I mean,
yeah.
I just, for a quick sec, because I really love the just top to bottom Colorado.
Oh, man.
Called it a Colorado craft podcast, because that's really what I want to focus on. And I love that you are seriously.
Wow, thanks. Yeah.
Top to bottom that way.
That's one thing is like, you know, I've always been real strict. Like, I don't like to support like these big markets and stuff, you
yeah.
know, myself. I personally like to go into like farmers markets and stuff, be able to get my veggies, like
oh, yeah.
anything like that. If I can like trade a bottle of whiskey for friends that are slaughtering cattle or something for some meat or whatever, you know,
right.
I do everything within state that I possibly can until it's like bottom line, like, well, I'm going to city market.
You right. know? It's the only thing I can do. Yeah,
exactly. But I try to do everything Colorado. And when it comes to a business, you know, we all got to, you know, support our local businesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, that being said, even local business owners have to support local businesses, because without all the local business owners here in this state,
yeah.
we wouldn't be here.
No, not at all.
You know, this is how our state runs. This is how, you know, we are able to accept and value everybody around us, is be able to buy from them and
yep.
do trades, like be able to buy stuff and all that, you know, it's great.
Well, kind of on that note too, I mean, and this is one thing that I've noticed, especially in the Colorado whiskey industry specifically, mm-hmm. but like Lenny from Deerhammer kind of helping mm-hmm. you get to everything started, right? Like
oh, yeah.
there is just that support structure I've found
through
Colorado businesses across the board in distilling, especially. Like, I think that's just such a cool way to go.
Definitely, you know. And that being said, you know, a decent amount of distillers, you know, that own distilleries and people that work for the distilleries, they've all said, you know, like, there's no such thing as competition when it comes to making whiskey.
Yeah,
it's all different.
Yep.
You know, and it's great to see people be able to enjoy the same passions, you know, and
yeah.
All work together and be able to come together. That's how the American single malt actually became what it is in America, because right. all the distillers from the Distilling Foundation came together and were able to talk about the rules and the laws that we should put forth for American single malt, and same with bourbon and everything, you know. It's all about family. And it might not be in a bloodline, but when it comes to it, we're all family when it comes to certain business aspects such as distilling, you know.
Oh, Colorado Distillers is absolutely a family. Like,
oh, yeah.
100%. And then talking to a whole bunch of them, like, you know, I've talked to some folks from, like, 291, from Waz, from Bear Creek, obviously Deer Hammer. But
and yeah.
they're all – the other cool thing is, too, is I've found it doesn't really have to be – like you said, there is no competition between you guys. But you all have kind of your own particular spin that you put on it.
Exactly.
Which allows for everybody to make something that's really cool – and you're not competing because then the other guy's like, man, that was a cool idea. And then they can build something just a little different off of it, make something else that's kind of its own spin, its own flavor.
Everybody's got their own way of doing something, you know?
Yep.
And that's something we all gotta put forth and see and respect, because it's so cool to see it just a different aspect of the same whiskey. You know, oh, this is aged in this kind of barrel. This is made this way compared to this. It's like, this is awesome. Like, there's so many different aspects of one type of whiskey. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, we can really enjoy everything because we can put it all together and none of it will taste anywhere near the same.
No, not... Either. Yeah, they'll all come out different. That's actually, single barrels are one of my favorites for that, too, because you can have the same mash, same distillation, like, everything, put it into two barrels that are both charred the same from the same area.
Yep.
Put them up next to each other, even in a rick house.
Oh, yeah.
And they could taste completely different.
Completely different, you know? And so, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I kind of branched us off on a tangent there, but with the cocktails, what's your favorite seasonal creation? Like, choose one for, since we're in summer and then fall's coming up soonish. Like, what's your favorite summer? What's your favorite fall kind of that you've done?
So my favorite summer cocktail, when it comes to the fruitier of the cocktails, it's the peach sweet water is what I call it. It's seasonal Palisade peach, smashed peaches with a simple syrup, a little bit of lemon, balsamic vinegar, and basil leaf.
Ooh, all right.
And it is incredible. It's one of my favorites by far.
Okay.
You know, and since we've been doing the rum, we also, one of my other favorites that's real fruity and tasty is the, we call it the Manchito, but it's the... it's pretty much a pina colada.
Okay.
So
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a blast.
Oh, it's great. And then, you know, the classic winter drink that I've always enjoyed, that I really got started with this distillery, is our old fashioned. We call it our Parson Brown.
Yep.
Smoke the glass, you know, it gives you that warm feeling on the inside because it's a real whiskey strong drink and it's got a very minimal amount of simple syrup. So it's not super sweet. It's not even really all that sweet. It's more whiskey strong, whiskey forward kind of a drink.
Yeah.
With a nice garnish of a, a freeze-dried orange. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that you guys do that I think is really cool, and I've seen it at a couple of other places, but this was the first place I saw it. I love the little stamp you heat up and pop into the big ice cube. I mean, I just, it's a cool, it's not a huge touch. It's not like a huge...
Yep.
thing for that, but I think that just adds such a neat little addition to it. It's like,
definitely,
it's just one of those small detail attention things that are
and that was one thing is I really like that idea, you know, because a lot of fancy restaurants and stuff will sometimes do that, you know, they'll put their logo on the ice cube and stuff.
Yep.
And while we're smoking our glass, we like to flip the glass back over, spin the big ice cube, we use these big ice cubes in the glass, with the smoke kind of swirling around the ice cube so it sticks to the ice cube. And then we heat up with a torch a brass stamp of our logo and then stamp it right on the top. And then to top it off, we actually put just the smallest amount, like it's like two drops of cherry juice.
Okay.
On the logo that we stamped
and
on
that's
the ice
what gives
cube.
It that color.
So it turns like the logo red.
Yep.
And like, really stands out in the ice cube so you can see it.
It doesn't really change the flavor of the whiskey too much. It's just
one
of those like very small attention to detail type of notes.
Exactly. Yep. You know, and if anything, you know, if it does have any bit of flavor, it kind of helps with the flavor of the old fashioned.
I was gonna say that cherry flavor is gonna go with an old fashioned.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
I'll have to get a video of the old fashioned BMA because the Parson Brown is definitely a go to up here. I'm a big fan of old fashions, but I love the smoked glass and watching you guys flip it, do all of that. I mean, it's
a really cool process. Yeah. It's fun to see, you know.
It really is. Yep. And I've seen a lot more places recently doing more like the smoked old fashioned and everything. But
yeah,
if you get good wood chips for it, it makes all the difference in the world.
It truly does.
It's, well, actually, and you know I do this. I do smoked salts, which you can buy on milehighbourbon.com/shop.
Oh, man, they're amazing.
But the smoked salts, like, you can get some that you buy online, and you can tell they're made with, like, something like a liquid smoke, or they're made, like, you know, much different process. Doing them small amounts at a time, doing them up, making sure you use just the best wood that you can find to smoke with it. It really is. It's a huge difference. And I noticed that in, you know, a couple of, because I've gone to some bars where it's like, yeah, they've got the wood chip and everything, but you can tell they're just grabbing like the cheapest chips they can get.
Exactly.
If you find the ones that, and you choose the wood that pairs with the flavors. I don't know what wood you guys use for the Parson Brown. But...
We actually use a hickory chip.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that being said, you know, hickory, I'm from originally Hickory, North Carolina. And that was like, always my favorite was the hickory wood smoked foods.
Yep.
So I was like, well, I gotta use hickory, and I tried mesquite and all this, but hickory was like, I was like, this is perfect.
No, that goes great with it. So, yeah. Well, that's cool too. I love that it's a kind of tie into you as well. It's just more your personal touch on the whole operation too.
Right.
Yeah, that's wicked, man. That's way cool.
Well, yeah.
Sweet. So I had one other question. I know we've kind of touched base on a lot of stuff, but we kind of went over it for a minute, and this is just out of curiosity for me. When you're doing the fermentations, are you open tank or closed tank?
I'm doing open tank.
Okay.
The reason being, I really love the idea of open tank. You know, Leopold's has always done open tank.
Yep.
Some of the bigger distilleries that are really renowned in other countries and stuff do open tank.
Yeah.
And the idea behind it is, the open pollens that kind of soar through the air, the open yeasts and stuff, they actually connect to your mash and bring out the flavor more.
Yeah.
And it's actually almost similar to, it's not almost, it's similar to honey, like local honey.
Okay.
Like ingesting local honey, it'll help you with, you know, certain allergies and stuff like that.
I didn't even think of that.
So like when pollen's flying through the air, I mean, we get some crazy pine pollen up here.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like cover your car in a day.
Yep.
But that being said, like we'll get the pollens kind of mixing in the air with the natural yeasts that we use.
Yeah.
And when they land in our open tank fermentation, it actually helps. It's like a nutrient.
Okay.
It helps with the fermentation. And you can see it during the winter. You don't see it as much, but the summer, it's like everything just booms. You're like, oh my God, it's,
yeah,
it's like creating these crazy curls that are like a foot high of foam. You're like, this is beautiful. And then the winter, it's like a slow ferment. You're like,
yeah,
it's the curls, but it's only a couple inches. And in the summer, it's like, whoa, this is
that's
insane.
Crazy.
But so, it really brings out, I think, flavor and I think some good healing properties in a sense as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I've heard a lot of times, you know, if your allergies are bad, get honey that's from the area you're in.
Exactly.
Because then that'll help your body kind of attach to it.
Exactly.
I wonder if that sticks through the distillation process, because,
you know, I've always wondered that too, but I like to think it will.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say it does. And that way, you know, we can always say, well, I'm not drinking whiskey, just drink whiskey. I'm trying to help my allergies.
I think exactly.
That's perfect. I think that's perfect for me. Yep.
Let's make every excuse in the book for it.
Yeah. Hey, we'll go. We'll do it. No, that's awesome. And I like the open tank fermentation. I understand, you know, like closing it off because you want, if you, you know, you've put a lot of effort into doing what you want to do. You don't want other stuff potentially changing it.
Yep.
But I do. I think the open tank kind of gives it just that ability to really pick up more of where you are too. It gives you more of that, you know, this is what fair play is.
Yep.
And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Try to keep it as old school and traditional as possible.
Yeah.
And what's more old school than an open tank fermentation, you know? So
yeah, backwoods, open tank fermentation, throw it into a still, get it done. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Especially with the malting, everything. It's like, man, malted grains nowadays, it's crazy. It's all done by these machines that are closed inside the machines.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I look at all these other countries that do like four malts, and I'm just so amazed. Like, I have to do that.
Oh man, I can't think of what the distillery is, but there's one in Scotland, and they do the four malt. Mm-hmm. They do it all by hand, but they've got a webcam up, and so whenever they're doing it, that's just sitting there. You could watch the process go.
Yeah,
and it's like, I mean, it's not going to be super exciting because, like you said, you got to just go kind of rake it, move it every couple hours, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it is really cool that they're like, not only are we saying, hey, we're doing it the traditional way, but watch us do it the traditional way. Like,
yeah,
we're showing that this is the way to do it.
That's amazing. I mean, it's like some of those places, really, I think all the places in Scotland that do it.
Yeah.
They all have like nets in the floors.
Yep.
So when like the whole building is pretty much a smoker.
Yeah.
And they just throw the, the peat right in.
Yep.
And then smoke it. And the whole building's just piling with smoke through the floors, through the grain while it's malting. It's like, you guys are so cool.
Oh, yeah, right? It's so awesome. It's
the world's biggest smoker.
Yep. Oh, that'd be cool to see that process happening in person. Can you imagine the smell, too? Like, I love peat smoke.
And that's actually one of the batches of American Single Malt. I haven't done more than one yet. I actually knew that Colorado has a lot of peat growing around the state.
Okay.
It's a different type of peat. It doesn't have that ocean kind of smell or scent.
Yeah.
But I actually collected a lot of peat towards Hartzell.
Okay.
And this was 4 or 5 years, about 5 years back now. I collected a bunch of peat after I malted the grain, the barley. I put it in my smoker with the peat.
Oh, neat.
Peated the shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God, excuse my language, but
no, all good.
It was insane. And when I pulled this out, it's like you would take one little kernel in the mouth, and it was like, that's more intense than any scotch I've smelt in my life. Like, it's almost way too peated.
Yeah.
And I distilled that, and I have it aging in the back of the distillery since.
Ooh, okay.
But I swear that barrel, every time I open it just to smell it.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be like the most heavy peated American single malt I've ever done in my life.
I might need you to crack the barrel for me to smell it before I leave.
Oh, definitely.
that sounds awesome. Because that was, I like, when I started getting into whiskey and everything, the peated was not something that I even, like, I smelled a couple. I was like, I don't know if this is really me. And then I actually started to, it grew on me. I started to appreciate it a lot more. And
yeah,
I love that smell.
Oh man. It grows on you quick when you become a whiskey lover and then all of a sudden start doing American single malts and work yourself to scotches.
Yeah.
It really grows on you sometimes. And everybody's got a different palate, you know? But it grew on me quick. I used to never like it. And then now I'm like, I love this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, get it heavier. Let's see how heavy we can get.
Yep. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, that's way cool, man. I'm super stoked to hear that. Well, sweet. I appreciate you. We're coming hour-ish on the episode now, which is about what we run. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you guys are opening up here relatively soon.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll make sure we get this kind of wrapped up a bit. Favorite spot in Fairplay to just go hang out? Like, if you were to get a bottle, get a glass, and you could choose a spot right around here, where would you tell somebody to go sit to sip your whiskey and enjoy the view?
Oh, man. Right outside on our deck. You get a good view of Mount Sherman where I store the barrels. And it's absolutely beautiful out here. You get the blue skies. You get the lake right below us. And then, you know, the view of three different 14,000-foot mountains. It's incredible. So it's worth every bit.
So there you go. Not only is it, you know, phenomenal whiskey, great place to be up here, but you got the best view of the mountains right in front too, which also makes it real easy to grab yourself another whiskey as soon as you finish the first one.
Oh.
For allergies.
For allergies.
Yep.
For your health.
Awesome. Exactly. Awesome, man. Well, tell people where they can find you online. If there's, like, I think you guys have maybe a social media.
Yeah, we got social media through Facebook, Snitching Lady Distillery, and then we also have Instagram, it's Snitching Lady Distillery as well.
Yep.
And you'll see our logo. You know, it's the lady on the phone, so don't get caught.
Yep.
And that being said, keep a lookout for us. Come visit us. We'll give you the tours. We'll give you the tastings, and we'd love to see you out here. So.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thomas, thank you again so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Give my little end of the thing spiel. definitely come check out Snitching Lady. Follow us, Mile High Bourbon. Support the site. We're social media as well, just at Mile High Bourbon across the board. Everything's all in the same thing. Check out milehighbourbon.com/shop. You can purchase, we've got rocks glasses, we've got those smoked salts, named Silver Heel Smoked Salts in honor of the mountain right up here, because salt's actually used on the crust when they can finally reopen, and it sounds like we're getting closer and closer every time, but Kicking Ass Mountain Pizza right behind where we're sitting right now, so they open back up, that salt's on the crust, best pizza that you can get, in my opinion, in the state. I mean, it is
the best pizza in the state.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic, so check them out. Check out Snitching Lady. And shout out again to Centennial Cuts. Thank you so much for sponsoring us, making this possible, because conversations like this don't happen without people supporting. So you guys shopping, you can help out the site that way. Help it out word of mouth. Share us around, all of that stuff. So, and then last shout out to Roma Ransom. They do the intro, outro music. Local Colorado duo band. They do a bunch of cool music. They're at distilleries. They're at breweries. You can find them at Roma Ransom on Instagram. See where they're playing next. So, Thomas, thank you again so much for joining me. This was the last of an episode, man. I learned a heck of a lot about just
appreciate it.
Everything right here. So, we'll come back up and have some more drinks and hang out again soon, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, cheers.
Cheers.